evening and welcome to another edition of In the Trenches with the head coach of the Bearcat football team, Rich Wright. I'm John Coffey, and we've got a good show lined up with a special guest here today and former Bearcat head coach and athletic director Mel Churchman. Rich, it should be a good show here.
Oh, it's always a good show with Coach T on. It's, fun having him around, fun having him as a mentor. So I'm excited about the show tonight.
Well, let's just talk about a couple of things before we bring Mel in here. One in particular, last week, another game where it's been a delay to get things started, about an hour and a half delay before that matchup with Central Missouri this past Saturday. And you guys are kind of getting used to that a little bit. It seems like one or two games a year you have to go through that. And I guess the nice thing, it seems like they've been at home for the most part, so you have some good locker room facilities and things you can kind of fill out that time frame with.
Yeah, you know, it's always easier when you're playing at home, you know, and you don't have to traverse the rain delay in a small locker room. Our kids were comfortable. We've been through the protocol before several times now, so our older kids kind of know how to act, and they directed the younger kids. And it's just a matter of trying to relax, and you know, it's almost like a reset. You know, every time. The difficulty is when you don't know what time you're going to kick off. We got pushed back a couple of different times, so I had to reset them a couple different times. But as long as they kind of know the mentality that they've got to be in, and you have enough time to be able to tell them, okay, time to focus, time to lock back in, time to go out there, let's go. You know, it usually works out okay.
And fortunately, it wasn't the case like you had, like the Iowa Hawkeyes had Saturday night. I think they wrapped up about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, finally. Boy, I did. I went home and watched that game, and all of a sudden it went into a delay, and I finally went to bed about 12:30, and they still hadn't started up again. And I was like, good Lord, I'm glad that's not me.
And I think it takes a special athlete to be able to overcome those type of things, because you get geared up for that set time, like you say, at 1:30 for kickoff, and then all of a sudden you got to dial it back and then dial it back in again. And you guys really react well to that situation.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a little bit easier the way that we had it with us. You know, it's more difficult, you know, like, so for example, this happened to us several years ago against Pitt, where it's the middle of the football game, and now you are a little sore, you are a little banged up, you are, you know, you have played snaps. Then to sit there idly for multiple hours becomes a little more difficult. But again, it's a mindset, it's a mentality. You have to get the players to buy into it. And fortunately for us, in those situations, it's worked out every time.
You know, one thing I was impressed with last Saturday as well was, despite the long delay there, you come back out, get ready to go for that 3 o'clock kickoff there, and you look around and the stands are full. The fans really stayed through the whole thing.
You know, that's awesome about our fan base. It was encouraging. It was a lousy day for most of the morning. And when I rolled into the complex, there were already people up in the tailgate lots. By the time our kids got done with breakfast and we walked up for pregame, you know, there were a lot of people, and it's indicative of the support that we have with the community, and then it being family day and having so many parents on campus, and was just very appreciative that they waited out the rain along with us and came in and packed the house.
Now, one thing last week on the show I wanted to bring up, and we just didn't have time, but it really came to where you had an opportunity to do this the last Saturday, was the instant replay. And we commented, and Matt in particular commented about the hang time you had on the replay flag there when you decided to throw it in that game.
Well, you know, I was waiting for him to conference, and you know, I'm just listening to the banter go on our sideline, and Keegan Sturdy came off the field and said, I watched him catch that ball. And you know, it was just one of those, a little bit frustrated with some of the calls, so I added a little pomp and circumstance to it myself. So
is that something you practice a little bit during practice?
No, but sure, maybe I should. You know, maybe I should work on that.
And let's just talk about a little more in detail about instant replay and the way the MIAA is doing it. And I think from what I understand, one of the main reasons that they can really do this is that the targeting calls and things like that, and then it kind of goes to some other issues, but targeting is one of the main issues.
Targeting is the main issue, because right now the way it's set up in Division II football, the referees, if it happens in the first half, are going to eject the kid, you know, and if you don't have any type of replay system, that kid's out of the football game. Now, they'll go and review it at half and see if they can get a confirmation or not. If they can't, he stays ejected, but if they can overturn it, you know, and that happens early in the first quarter, then a kid potentially loses a quarter and a half of football game for not doing anything wrong. So, you know, that was the big catalyst. It's got its challenges. I think a lot of people have the perception that, you know, we have 27 camera angles like they do, you know, on a television broadcast, and that's not the case. I think it's something that that's needed. I think that it's something that needs to evolve. Right now, we only have two camera angles, and they're both literally tied into us. It's our wide copy that we use for film, and it's our tight copy. You know, so like for example, when we're at home, we have a whole production crew that does the MIAA network feed, and that's a much different camera angle than what we have. I mean, we have two shots, wide and tight, and so depending upon where you are on the field. That can be really skewed. So I think eventually the more camera angles that can be added into it, the more beneficial it is. So one of the things that I have to consider, our butt shot, which is what we call it, is down opposite the scoreboard. So if we're on the scoreboard side of the 50, that becomes a long shot, and you know, you really don't see things. So our wide angle has to encompass everybody on the field, so it's hard to get details from that. So it really boils down to the tight shot in the back end that helps referees differentiate.
You know, I think we saw some of that thinking the week before at Lincoln, where Lincoln threw the replay flag a couple of different times. One, it paid off for them with the targeting, I think, that got waved off at that particular point. But then they had a question about, I think maybe it was a Northwest score or something, where they got in. There just wasn't any angle that could have changed that at all.
Absolutely not. So we scored on the opposite end of where their tight shot was, and their camera wasn't exactly the best position, let's just put it that way. You know, they just had it on a tripod. It was up in the air, but not nearly like what our lift system is. So, you know, you just have to kind of factor all that in. You know, the thing that I've found interesting has been, you know, they're asking me specifically what it is that I'm challenging. Because certain things are challengeable and others aren't. And it does not necessarily coincide with what's going on in Division I.
Yeah, that's true, and I think it's going to be a long time before it will be able to, especially just with the camera angles and the technology that's available.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Now, a couple other things before we bring Mel in. I just want to kind of touch on just overall with your defense at this particular point in the season, just doing such a fantastic job, especially shutting down the running game. I think, number one in Division II in shutting down the run. And what's been some of the keys to being able to do that this season?
You know, we always place a big-time emphasis on that. If you look back statistically, you know, for really the last – I don't know, 10 years, we've been really good against the run. We want to make a team one-dimensional. Whether they're a run team first or a pass team first doesn't really matter to us. It's just about trying to make them as one-dimensional as we possibly can. And, you know, if it's a run-heavy team, if we can slow that down and force them to throw the ball more, we feel like it's advantage us. And if it's a passer, a team that passes the ball more and we can delete the running game, then we can kind of hone in on what we want to do. It's all about getting to third down. And you know, one of the things our defense prides itself on is what we call get the ball off the ramp. We never want to see the ball run vertical. We always want it running horizontally. We feel like with our kids and our speed that you know, I know one thing, I'm not very smart, but if you're running the ball east and west, you're not gaining yards. And so the longer we can keep that going and have guys with speed that can go chase things down, the better we're going to be.
Oh, no doubt about that. Now, on the other side, that offensive line, talk going into the season, how you got some young guys coming in, stepping up and starting on the offensive line, and only one quarterback sack at this point in the season. That has to be just something that you feel very good about as well.
Yeah, you know, I think our offensive line is really starting to gel and evolve. You know, it's also a result of the quarterback. Todd's done a great job with those kids. We've really expanded our package as far as what we do with the quarterbacks, meaning they have the keys to the car in the sense that they can check protections at the line of scrimmage. So with our hard counts and trying to get, you know, people ID'd as far as backers and secondary guys on potential blitzes, we can slide protections the opposite way. We can do some different things. So the quarterback kind of knows and can get rid of the ball accordingly.
One other note here with Elijah Green and being named the MIAA Defensive Player of the Week earlier in the week. Then later in the week, the National Player of the Week on the defensive side from D2Football.com. You have to feel real good about the what he's been able to do for you.
Yeah, you know, Elijah started for us all last season, and he was vital to what we did, but he was just one of the four. This year, you know, one of the things that I challenged him to do is step up and be one of the guys. I mean, the guys that we got to count on. And boy, he delivered last week. He played an excellent game. He was all over the field. I couldn't be happier for someone because he's just worked so hard at it. You know, he was a kid that came in here as a linebacker, and You know, we kicked him down on the defensive line because we felt like that was going to be his home, and didn't have success right away, but never wavered, never blinked, just went to work, rolled up his sleeves, really has worked hard on his craft, and now you're starting to see the results.
Again, we're broadcasting live from Angie Restaurant in downtown Maryville. I'm in the trenches with the head coach of the Bearcats, Rich Wright. When we come back, we'll be joined by former Bearcat head coach, Mel Churchman. That's coming up right after this timeout.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by local internet provider United Fiber, providing a variety of fiber-fast internet plans for residents and businesses with speeds up to 1 gig. More information is available online at unitedfiber.com.
Support for the Bearcats comes from Sure Ag LLC with locations in Forest City, Savannah, and Osborne. Paxton, Randy, Rich, and the Sure Ag team provide the region with fertilizer, chemicals, and other farm supplies. More info on products and service at 660-446-3376.
Support for KXCV, KRNW comes from the United States Air Force, offering more than 130 career choices, education, benefits, and more. Full-time opportunities are available now. For more information, Technical Sergeant Katrina Smith can be reached at 816-341-8227 or airforce.com.
Support for the Bearcats comes from United Country Property Solutions, LLC, welcoming Phil and Amy Schreck to the Maryville team. United Country Property Solutions specializes in selling land and country homes serving Missouri and Kansas. Brokers Bob Carlson and Dan McChristie.
Support for KXCV KRNW is provided by the Northwest Foundation, providing support for the Northwest Alumni Association and the university's funding needs since 1971. More information is available on Facebook or online at nwmissouri.edu/alumni.
Today's broadcast is underwritten by A&G Restaurant at 208 North Main in Maryville. A&G offers more than 100 menu items, Greek night every Friday, banquet rooms, and more. For additional information, agrestaurant.com.
Welcome back to In the Trenches with the head coach of the Bearcat football team, Rich Wright. And Rich, as we mentioned before the break, we've got a special guest with us here today, and that former Bearcat head coach, Mel Churchman.
Absolutely. You know, it's always great to have Coach T around. He's been such a mentor to me over the years. You know, got here in 1995, and he's been like a dad to me. So it's wonderful to have him in the community. It's wonderful to be able to pick his brain on different things, and excited to have him on the radio tonight.
And, Mel, I couldn't help but watch you and some of the other coaches that you've had a part in at the MIAA Media Day. You had, I think, at the table there, you were there with Rich, Adam Dorrell, of course, Josh Lamberson, and just seemed like you just kind of holding court there with some of your your old coaches and players.
Well, it's you know, it's really fun. I don't know how Rich is. I never enjoyed playing, coaching against those guys. And, you know, we had Bart in our conference and Jim in our conference. But, you know, the good thing about it is when it's over and you're friends again and you move on. But it for me now, it's fun because I get to see, you know, I got to talk to Josh quite a bit before the game Saturday and talked with Adam today, as a matter of fact, and looking forward to just seeing what they're doing and how things are going, and you know, we'll see how things work out. So,
yeah, I know.
I'm still a Bearcat.
Absolutely. But you know, you look at your coaching tree here. Of course, you got Rich here, Josh, also Jim Sabota. You mentioned John McMenamin. There's just, and probably far more than I've even mentioned here, that that you've had a part in their careers. And that, what's that mean to you when you see guys that either played for you or coached with you that have gone on to have so much success?
Well, it's really gratifying because it just it speaks volumes about our program, and most of it started here. I've got some guys from Austin College that you know, they're coaching too. I think I've got nine head coaches in college right now that have either played for me or coached with me, and you know, and if you go beyond that with high school coaches and assistant coaches in college, there's quite a few. But no, it's just it's just a good feeling, and the neat thing is to you know, be sitting at home and get a call, and somebody, one of those guys is saying, well, what do you think about this, or we had this happen, or, you know, I mean, it's just the relationships that you have. Those are the most important things.
And when you look at what they do to influence their players and student athletes, I mean, it really expands greatly the impact that all these people have.
Well, it's true, and it's fun for me to, you know, like watching Josh's team Saturday, watching Rich's team every Saturday, to see you know, to see that obviously they're doing things different, but the base is still the same, you know, and all these guys are building their teams on character, and they want to have first-class individuals. They want to have good students, and that's really what it's all about. And so that's what it, you know, why it's really fun to watch them develop.
You know, that's the thing that I think if you asked all of us, you know, that we took from the program and our time here, is Coach T did such an awesome job of teaching those values to us, and they never wavered. You know, it was never about just wins and losses. It was about doing things the right way. It was about character. It was about family. It was about, there were so many little lessons that we learned along the way. I can never be as organized as he was, but boy, I try. you know, it's just, you know, there are so many valuable lessons that he taught and didn't even realize he was teaching them along the way. But obviously a lot of us paid attention.
I would think too, obviously, the job at hand is to win football games and to prepare players to go out and win. But there has to be, along the line, you guys have a lot of fun together as well. And it seems like you guys through the years have enjoyed what you do so much, and that plays a huge role as well.
Well, I think that's really true. I mean, you know, I think our staff here, especially, you know, the 17 years I was head coach, we always had fun. There were days when it may not have been all fun, but for the most part, we really did. Everybody cared about everybody else, and we had fun. We joked with each other, but bottom line was we still everybody cared about you know, the well-being of everybody else, and that's what really made it fun. And for me, it was the families. You know, I mean, our two oldest daughters are a long ways away, so I inherited a lot of grandkids here as these younger coaches were raising their families, and that's really made it fun for Carol and I. You know, this whole time to just be around and see those kids grow. And I mean, you know, like Coach Wright, they've got a daughter in college already, mm-hmm. and that it just doesn't seem possible. So.
No, it doesn't. And she had her first Thanksgiving at the church, my house.
Yeah,
so
you know that goes back a long ways.
Yep.
But it's really something.
Yeah, it was always fun after the game to look down on the field and see all the coaches' kids out there running around on the field playing a little football on their own and things. And that was always something that I think is neat to watch.
Well, it was. You know, we had quite a few boys, and the floor boys were always out there. I know that. And they had a lot of fun. But, you know, that epitomizes what our program's about. It's about family. And, you know, I think that because we as coaches cared about each other and valued each other, that our players then felt that same way. And that's what we wanted to establish, and that's the core of our program.
Well, I think most people know that Central Oklahoma's the opponent this week. Adam Doral's down there as head coach. When everyone was on the same staff here, any particular stories about working with AD and think that we can bring out on the air here that won't get anybody in trouble?
I can give a couple that we won't put on the air. A couple of recruiting stories.
Yeah.
I always tell a story about, you know, Coach Doral was he always wanted to think ahead, and so we're playing Washburn, and we were getting beat by Washburn. I think it was a homecoming game, and we were down, and we got the ball back. I think we were down four or something like that, and we got the ball back late in the game, and got it back on our side of the field, but close to the midfield, probably on the 40-yard line, and there was probably like 3 minutes left. We had our timeouts left, and he, right away, he said to me, "We're in four down territory, aren't we?"
I remember this.
And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Yeah, I think we are." Well, we got one first down right away, and then we threw an incomplete pass and completed one on the sideline for like 2 yards. So it's third and eight, and he said, "Well, Coach, I'm going to get about half of this, and then we'll go for it on fourth down." I said, "Okay, so." You know, most of them know that Coach Doral wasn't real good in math.
No.
We completed another 2-yard pass, and so it's fourth and six. And so I just said, punt team, because we had our timeouts left. And I thought he was going to come out of the box. He was screaming, and he said, "You lied to me." So the best part is we punch, the ball rolls out of bounds on about the 2-yard line. You may remember this. First play from scrimmage, they fumble in the end zone. They recover it, but we get a safety. We get the ball back, go down and score, and we ended up getting into winning it in overtime. And I remember after the punt went out of bounds, he said, I heard him say, well, maybe that wasn't such a bad call.
I can remember the first season that, and I'll keep this one kind of between the lines, but you remember the first season that he took over as a coordinator, and we're up on the old practice fields. And I don't even remember what got them into it, but he and Boswick got after each other.
And during spring ball?
They were jawing back and forth. Yeah. And so somebody hit somebody, you know, and somebody took exception to that, and somebody else. And it just went back and forth, back and forth. So all of a sudden, Mel just blows his whistle. And if he says on the line, the kids are like, oh, God. And it was Doral and Boswick that started the whole thing. So I think the darn argument's over with. And, you know, bygones be bygones. We're all pretty good at that. Well, I go in the locker room to take a shower, and they're still going at each other. And, you know, he's like, you know, I'm your equal now, Scott. And Scott's Scott. And, you know, it kept that, you know, raised his – hit the hair on the back of his head, and it was finally Coach T that had to come in and calm them both down.
The most disturbing part was we had two or three staffs. It was in the spring, and we had two or three visiting staffs there, and I'm thinking, oh, my God. You know, we got coaches that are arguing with each other, with these guys trying to figure out what we're doing. So
we look really good here, don't we? Putting our best foot forward.
Yeah, there you go. Should have lined both of them up to run then.
I think Xavier was part of that deal, too.
I think so.
I remember that.
Rich, when you go up against an opposing coach that you've coached with or have played with and things like that, what's some of the feelings you have in that type of situation?
You know, I have so many friends in the MIAA, and AD and I obviously have a great relationship. It's kind of like Coach T said, really the only difference, he and I talk fairly regularly, and you know, during game week, just like last week, I didn't talk to Lambeau. On Monday morning, Lambeau called me, and it's just that one week. It's kind of weird. We're going to play each other, but once the week's over with, it goes back to normal. He's trying to build a program down there. We're trying to, you know, get to that next step for us here, and it's just the next step on the schedule.
You know, one thing that strikes me, just overall with MIAA and the way you guys get along, the different coaching staffs around the conference, it seems like there's more of a collegiality maybe among you guys than maybe some other conferences. You feel that way?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I've always felt like, you know, all the coaches in the MIAA for the most part really get along well together. I had a laugh at this was just the other, not too long ago, a couple of our officials were talking about that they went and officiated a playoff game, happened to be in Michigan, and the two teams there, they said they were supposed to have conference officials, but they decided to bring in neutral, you know, officials from outside the conference because they said those people in the meeting, they wouldn't even talk to each other. So we don't have that here.
No,
we really don't.
I mean, Chris Brown is a real good friend. Josh Lynn is a real good friend. Garen Higgins is a real good friend. I mean, you know, Craig Schurig. There's a lot of guys in the league that I talk to. And, you know, we bounce ideas off each other. And, you know, it's never X's and O's, but it's, you know, we just talk about philosophical things, and they're good sounding boards. You know, the one thing I learned when you sit in that chair at the very end of the hall, life gets a little more lonely. So to have some, you know, to have some people that are going through similar experiences as to what you are is always helpful.
And you talked about earlier that Mel's been such a mentor to you. What are some of the things that you took away from having Mel as a head coach when you were on the staff?
You know, it's just about, you know, first and foremost, he was emphatic. I can remember getting here in 1995, and he was going to change the culture of this place. And he really started with changing the brand of student-athlete that we had, and it was student first. And he made it a priority that was non-negotiable, you know, about going to class, about doing little things right, about details. You know, and when you're a young coach, sometimes you get caught up so much in the X's and O's of things that you forget that it's not about your scheme. It's about how you approach the everyday. You know, Nick Saban's made it famous in, you know, the words, the process, but Coach T was doing that in 1995. I mean, there was just an order to the way that we were going to do things, and it was sequential, and it was never changing. He was very, like I told you earlier, he was extremely detail oriented. But he had an innate ability to make everyone around him feel. The word good is not a, he created personal relationships with people, and it didn't matter whether it was a coach, it didn't matter whether it was a kid. You know, he took the time to get to know you, to get to talk to you. Just his ability to create relationships throughout our football program was literally amazing to me.
Hey, Mel, I know you retired from coaching. You've been involved with athletics since then as athletic director at Northwest Missouri State, and still keep a close touch on the game of football. As you look at the game itself, how's the game changed here in the last few years?
Well, I don't think the game has changed a whole lot. I think the 42nd clock has changed some things. I think. That's my one regret. If I could go back and coach again, I think I'd take a lot more advantage of the 42nd clock from an offensive standpoint. But I think that some of the things that the players have to deal with and the coaches have to deal with, the social media. I'm thankful I'm not coaching. First of all, I don't understand it, and second, I don't really appreciate a lot of it. So I'd be lost at that. I don't have my Twitter handle and all that kind of stuff. But I don't think, honestly, I don't think the kids have changed that much either. It's just that they've got more things to deal with now.
Yeah, I would imagine too, Rich, that is an aspect that you kind of have to keep a handle on as much as you can. I mean, there's only so much you can do with social media and things, but what do you try to do with the team?
It's just basically educating them that, and Coach T's always talked about this, living in a small community, but now when you have the ability to have social media, your community expands exponentially. And it's you don't just represent you now represent us. And so the things that you project out there, and at that time it was in the community, and now it's on social media, not only reflect on you, they reflect on the rest of us. And so we really try and get them to steer away from having, opinions about certain things. That why does that need to be shared? If you want to do something in support of our program, or you want to do something to lift yourself up, whatever. But as far as going out and throwing comments out there, it's just really not helpful to anyone, and it's not reflective on our program or us. And so if you wouldn't say it, in a football setting, don't say it out in the public.
And as we talk about Central Oklahoma coming up, of course, Adam Dorla, head coach there again. As you prepare this week and watching film of what UCO has been doing, do you see anything familiar that AD did when he was here, or has he been out long enough that some things have changed since then?
No, there's some carryover, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, and that's kind of his specialty. But, defensively, it's completely different than what I did when we were here together. So that's changed. But, yeah, you see some commonality with their offensive system. And, I see just different things that I used to see in practice. But, there's been an evolution to it as well.
And I would imagine from the standpoint of him watching what you guys do defensively, it's kind of a similar situation there.
Yeah, absolutely. When we won the national championship in 2013, we were in what we call an underfront. From there, after we got into 15 and we got banged up a little bit up front and played a lot of 30, also played our 4-3, and then in 16 we kind of moved into this 4-3 that we've played since. So it was really just his last year and a half, 2 years that he got to see that. So it should be fun.
And Mel, as you watch this game Saturday, talk a little bit about your feelings of watching this matchup.
Well, I just want it to be, I want them both to do well. I want us to do a little better.
Me too.
But I do, just like Saturday, at halftime, I was happy for Josh because I thought they played pretty well in the first half. We're a better team than they are. We wore them down. But I felt like there were some positives that he could come out of there with, and that's what I hope for, I think it's going to hopefully be the same thing Saturday. I think we're a much better team right now, and so the results will show that, I'm sure. So, right, Rich?
I hope so. No pressure there, Coach T.
Yeah, none whatsoever there. All right. And just real quickly, Rich, why do you see us in the big keys on Saturday?
You know, first of all, offensively, we've got to take care of the quarterback. Number two is a dynamic player. He's a kid that's really beaten people more with his legs than he has with his arm necessarily, but he's dangerous. He's a big 6'3", 220-pound kid. They're running a lot of play action, boot, misdirection, trying to get the ball. You know, they're trying to run the ball and trying to work their passing game primarily through three-step and play action. Defensively, they play a base. Their base front, I guess, of what I would say, is kind of more of an NFL front with two true downs and then two stand-ups, and play with a two-backer box and five secondary guys, but they'll also morph into a 3-3 stack. So it's just our offensive guys being able to ID that and you know, get the right calls and ID the right people in terms of blocking, and, you know, we'll see what happens.
All right, sounds good. Guys, enjoyed it tonight.
Thanks so much.
You bet. That's Rich Wright on In the Trenches, along with former head coach at Northwest Missouri State, Mel Churchma. A reminder that today's broadcast underwritten by A&G Restaurant at 208 North Main in Maryville. A&G offers more than 100 menu items, Greek night every Friday, banquet rooms, and more. For additional information, agrestaurant.com. Again, my thanks to Mel and Rich. I'm John Coffey, and so long from A&G.